Hey guys, thanks for joining us for episode 1 in season 4 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Yes, it is August 9th. It is time for episode 1. Life has happened to our family. I'm sure it's happened to yours. Maybe we can all learn from it. We'll cover some of those life lessons that we've learned over the next couple episodes. Got a couple of good ones we'll touch on in today's episode, including country female vocal group, The Girls Next Door. You might remember them from their time on Nashville Now with Ralph Emery back in the day. They've got a brand new single we'll be talking about. We'll also talk to singer-songwriter Chase Mitchell about his latest work as well. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and share with your friends. Well, we're going to take a look at some headlines or, well, things you might not have heard from around the world, like this one. Do you think you eat dinner earlier or later than most people? Or just about average? Well, if your normal dinner time is after 6:19 p.m., you're later than average. Now, someone combined stats from surveys taken between 2018 and last year, and 6:19 is the average dinner time overall. But it also depends on the state you're in. Pennsylvania has the earliest dinner time at 5:37 p.m. That's followed by Maine at 5:40. Then six states start at 6 p.m. on the dot. Those include Vermont, Wyoming, North Dakota, New Hampshire, Alaska, and New Mexico. Texas and Mississippi have the latest start time at 7:02 p.m., then Tennessee and Arkansas around 7. Now, in general, if you want to define what dinner time is in the U.S., stretches from 5:07 to 8:19 p.m. All right, guys, it is good to be back to the podcast. A lot of folks know there's been lots of life has happened over the last year and a half, and the folks that still believe in you in spite of all you've gone through, including one of my good friends, Bev, reached out with a name that I knew I recognized, The Girls Next Door. And The Girls Next Door on with us today. And the website says 2.0, and I'll let you kind of explain that as well. Guys, first off, I'm not going to call you out individually by name. It is such a privilege to have the chance to visit with you.
Thank you so much.
We're so glad to be here.
2.0.
Right. Yeah. Congratulations on being back too.
Well, yeah. It's been a struggle, but I know you guys know struggle too, because life hits us all a little bit, and
does. We've all had those seasons.
Yes.
Believe me, every one of us. So there's no difference.
Yeah. Now tell me about the new single. I played it on YouTube a little while ago, and those harmonies, and I just loved it. I was raising my hand. I felt like I was in church there for a minute. So praising along with you. Tell us where the song came from and what it's like to have the new single out there as well.
First of all, let me make sure you listen to the right single. Did you listen to What's This Thing You've Got About Leaving?
I'm just talking about the harmonies. Harmonies. Okay. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Good deal. That is our first single, What's This Thing You've Got About Leaving? But we also did a gospel video that we're going to be releasing as well. And I thought I might have accidentally sent you that one. But but anyway, and that's okay too, because that's a great, same harmonies. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you're right. And that's one of the reasons why we picked that song. What's This Thing You've Got About Leaving is the vocals come up right in the beginning, and they just, you know, bam, they're in your face. And that's who we are. That's what we do. And so that was one reason. Of course, it's well written, it's solid, it's not too heavy, you know, to mm-hmm. be your first single. Mm-hmm. And our producer actually wrote that song, T.W. Hale.
Now tell us, what's it like? I know another one of the videos I saw up on the YouTube was you guys, the Opry sound check, doing the Every Day by the Oak Ridge Boys. And I know you guys have a kinship with the Oak Ridge Boys, the Statlers, and a lot of folks that we have common friendships with as well. And what's it like to have friends in the industry that believe in you as much as those guys do?
Oh, wow. And when we first started and started touring, to have the opportunity to tour with those established acts was amazing. Not only did we learn a lot from those folks, but they also, their fan base, they embrace, if they put us on the stage with them, then those fans embraced us as well. So we also gathered a lot of fans when we got to work with those folks, but they taught us a lot. They encouraged us. And then, like you said, we got to be on the Opry stage just recently during, it's not Fanfare anymore, it's Music Fest in Nashville, and got to sing one of the Oak Ridge Boys songs for Sunday Morning Country. And what another thing that was exciting and really neat to us about that, 30 years ago, we were on that stage for Sunday Morning Country. And wow, to be invited back for that, it was like, okay, God, you've got our path for us, and we're going to jump on it, and we're going to go.
So. Now, what was it that brought you guys back together? Have you guys always kept in contact? Has there always been, maybe next week, we'll do it? Is it?
A little bit of both, yeah.
Yes, I think it was always maybe next year.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. But yes, all four of us never felt like we were done. Mm. I think we all felt like that we were going to be doing something at some time. And as you said, life happens. And then between raising family, taking care of parents, and dealing with illnesses and all the things, this was really the first time in all these years that we've all been on the same page in life to say, yeah, let's do this. So last year in May, we did a reunion concert right outside of Nashville. And it was just fun. It was just fun time for us to do some things and invite friends and family and old band members and people from the music industry from years past. And there really wasn't an agenda involved other than we just wanted to have some fun. But a couple of producers came to that show and then approached us and said, hey, you know, well, let's do a project together. And that really kind of gave the wind behind us, I think, to get started with it. And it was all timing. And we feel like that God is all over this as far as the timing and all the things that's kind of kept us together and brought us back together now. So we just say, hey, it is now or never. This yeah. is the name of our CD, Now or Never. So we're just excited. But yeah, I feel like that we always felt that we would do it again at some point.
And I think one of the things in relaunching the podcast, if you will, I want people to talk about the times that we go through, the life that we go through. And for the four of you, having the connection that you've had over that time, how important is it to have each other to lean on?
Ooh, wow. You can't even, there's nothing to really, to gauge that by the importance. It's infinity. It is one of the most important things. When we did go on our hiatus 30 years ago, it wasn't over anything that was a fallout or an issue that we had. It was really all of us coming together, having the same mindset that the next phase of our life, we've got to really invest in our families and some other things that God has called us to do, because the business is hard. And it really hasn't, it's changed a lot, and maybe it's even harder. We don't know just yet, but we're finding some things are a lot different.
Maybe next year.
So when we think about what we mean to each other, as the two sitting down here in front, they have had cancer and they fought it, they beat it. And so, and there was lots of conversations, calling each other, praying over the phone, weeping, all of that that goes along with friendships. There have been buried parents and spent the last years of those lives, of their parents' lives, loving on them. And we would, so it, those kind of things happen with life, from raising teenagers that, woo, if anybody's done that, but just encouraging each other, because we all have kids of different ages, and they all three now have grandkids. I don't have grandkids yet. But yeah, when you talk about what we mean to each other, it is living life together. And every step of the way, you know, and when we were really busy with little ones, we might go months and not talk. But the minute somebody got the urge to talk, it was like you just step right back in. And then there'd be times I'd go, okay, I talked to Cindy. I need to see what Diane and Doris are doing today. So it's just been a beautiful, beautiful relationship, a blessing, a treasure.
So what's it like when you got together again for the first time to sing? When you got those vocal cords going together, was it instantaneous for it to all fall back together?
Talk about Chris's wedding.
Yeah, Chris's wedding.
Well, Diane's son, I guess, I think it's 14 years ago, got married, and we were all there in Nashville at the rehearsal dinner. And after the rehearsal dinner, we were standing out in the parking lot, and we said, let's just sing. So we sang Sweet, Sweet Spirit a cappella, which is something that we had done for a lot of years, you know, years ago. And so I think it was an aha moment for all of us, because it was like, oh, my goodness. We felt like that no time had passed, and we really felt the Spirit.
Yeah.
And I think that was at that moment, it was like, okay, we don't know when, we don't know how, maybe next year, but it was going to happen at some point. But I think that was the beginning of putting it back, the spark. It was a spark that got it going.
And that's really when the elaborate planning began, because we started talking about doing things. Of course, Doris and I did have our cancer bouts were not at the same time. So that took up some time for us to go through that recovery and surgeries and chemotherapy and all. So, but after, once we got that out of the way, we still had that Chris's wedding in our mind, you know. Then we started talking about doing the show in Murfreesboro, which we did. Have we talked about that? My brain did. Yeah. We've done six interviews today.
We did one in Murfreesboro even a few years ago.
No, I'm talking about, have we already talked about this?
Excuse us while we discuss.
Hey, just take a moment. Just let me know whenever we're
Yeah, yeah. Well, you won't be on this, so never mind. No, but that led to that reunion concert that we did in Murfreesboro, right outside of Nashville. And that's really when it started, because we knew that people were enjoying it. And of course we got that, you know, we got that dose of performing again.
Yeah.
And with for a nice audience, you know, and I think there was no looking back after that concert.
But the interesting thing, because nothing is free, but everything that we've done along the way, it's God has just put his kiss on it. Mm. You know, and just in small things and big things. So part of the thing we had to do was to get money so that we could do this project, because you don't record for free.
Yeah.
And we got a wonderful deal, if you want to call it. I don't even know the right phrase to do it. So the people were very generous, our producers, H2 Productions. But we don't want anybody to do anything for free. You know, you reap what you sow, kind of thing. So so we knew we had X amount of dollars to raise, to come up with. And one of the producers said, have you heard of Kickstarter? So, you know, there are a lot of crowdfunded things out there right now. And we'd not heard about it, but we started reading about it, researching it. And our goal was $20,000. We raised $23,000. Wow. So when we think about God's going, okay, I got this. You don't you worry, I got this. And so he does exceedingly more than we could ever ask. That's what the word says. And we believe that. We've seen it every step of the way. So we think about some of that money was from previous fans that said, man, I can't wait to hear y'all 30 years later. But a lot of it was friends and family that just said, y'all need to do this. Y'all have so much to offer. You have such a great message moving forward. So that's something that we think about, how this over the last year and a half, the things that are you kidding me? This has got to happen.
Now, what is, since you've been out of the industry, so to speak, for the last 30 years, what is the best new lingo that you've learned, and what is the worst new technology
social
word?
Social media.
Yeah, there you go.
Social media.
And traction and hits.
Organic.
And for me, those are good words.
Right.
Not so much. Tammy's pretty inductive.
Streaming.
Content.
Yeah, content. That's one thing we hear Diana's going, okay, girls, I need more content. Send me some more content. Mm-hmm.
It's content, not content. Right.
Yeah. It's not content.
That's good. For sure.
What is it?
He says it's content, not content.
Oh, content. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Content. Really good. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Yeah,
they're not very content unless you have a lot of content, right?
Oh, well, yeah, she's not.
Now tell us what was it like to get the video, get it all put together and have it out there available for the fans to check at now. And what's it like to get that feedback from them as well?
Oh, no, the video was, we had a blast doing that. And we're going to brag. All of our husbands have been extremely supportive. That's one thing we're so thankful for. But Cindy's husband did the video, and he was amazing. And I know, Cindy, you might want to say something about
it. Yes, he did a great job. But all of our husbands played a big part in this. So we're very fortunate to have that support.
Yes, we sure are.
So the video was fun. It was great to get back into that kind of element of entertainment and trying to produce something that's relevant to us now versus what we did. And again, we had control over this one. The other two or three we've done 30 years ago, we just showed up and they told us what to wear, how to do, whatever. So this was, that's really fun with this video. Is this is our stuff.
We're getting ready to do another one for our next single. So
now what is the next single going to be called?
When the Water's Down.
And give us a little insight into what's the story behind it. You opened the can of worms.
It's a great story song. Good. Is what it is. You know, it talks about, you know, a small town that has a lot of secrets, and they're on the Mississippi River and the water goes down and everybody was praying for rain because they knew what was going to come up when the water goes down. Bullet ridden cars, wedding rings, you know.
Money bags. So when they had that drought, it was bad.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be it's a good song. It's a great song. We're real pleased with it.
Yeah.
And it'll be out hopefully by September the 8th is what we're shooting for right now. So
that's cool. Now, where's the writing inspiration? Where has that been staying active for you guys over the years? Has the inspiration for writing ideas? Everybody's going, no, not at all.
We've never written anything that we've ever sung. We're not in, none of us can claim to be writers. So we've been fortunate, blessed that we've had a lot of really good songs pitched to us. And quite a few of the songs on this last album were co-written by our producer, which when he pitched us the songs, he did not say, hey, this is my song. We listened to a bunch of songs. He said, y'all take these home, tell me what you like. And all of us, pretty much so many of his were in our top five or six. And then Diane's son, he wrote one of the songs and we love it. And it's really a lot of people's favorites. So that's kind of when you ask about inspiration, we're just glad we are blessed with great writers that want to give us something to listen to.
So how hard does that make it listening for a song that you feel? Is that one of those things that it actually comes a little easier, if you will?
I think it's easier with age.
Yeah.
And experience. Yeah. And honestly, we're almost always on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Almost always. It's just been that way. You know, we don't have very many disagreements about songs.
And we know each other so well, we can listen to a song and go, man, this is going to be great for Doris.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Diane's going to sing this one. So great. You know, I think that plays a big part too, as far as kind of just knowing each other.
And choosing where we are now in life and choosing the message that we want to communicate. A lot of that, I think, helped us where it was amazing. We all listened to the same 30 songs for a week. And when we came back with our top seven or eight, usually about five of them were at least everybody had the same five somewhere on their list. So that really shows us how clear we are of where we are right now. Mm-hmm.
And obviously from the sound, I'm a preacher's kid myself. So the sound, you grew up in church, I'm just going to say, right? that's where you learned the harmonies, right? How young were you when you first sang your first harmony? Each of you.
Harmonies?
Yeah. How young were you when you could pick out a harmony? That's
Oh, yeah. I was five. My family, we grew up singing gospel music in Texas. So me and my brother and my sister, we sang Joshua the Battle of Jericho. Yep. That was when we had harmony on. And All God's Children anyway. So I know that was something that I'm sitting around the piano, my mom pounding out everybody's parts.
I was probably about the same age when I sang harmony too, but mine was in church. Man, I was, how old did you say, five? I was maybe seven, you know, when I did mine, but it was in church for sure.
We all grew up singing in church. Yeah. I don't remember when I first started singing harmony, but I sang my first solo at six in church. So we all, you're right.
Yeah.
You pegged it.
I can hear it. You can hear that stuff. You can hear that. That's
and,
for sure.
And I probably was in junior high and one of the choral, I think, oh goodness, what are all those musicals that you do in the Baptist church? That's when my first solos and things came out and you had to learn all those parts.
Cantatas? You know. Was that a cantata?
Well,
we not at her church.
You haven't heard that? She said not at that one.
For musicals. I remember youth cantatas. Musicals. Yeah, but there were cantatas in the adult choir, but the youth choir, we walked.
I yeah. gotcha.
In adult choir, actually.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's right, Two Rivers. I went to go up at Two Rivers Baptist Church in Nashville, so anyway.
That's awesome.
But I think I was a little later getting started as far as music being my direction because I loved horses and wanted to be a veterinarian. Mm. And then realized my grade point average would not get me there. So
you had a good fallback at least.
I did have music scholarship, so that was okay. That worked out good.
That's cool. Now, as you come out after the last year and a half planning, and now that we've got music out there, how has the mindset, maybe the goal setting changed for you guys now that you got yourselves out there in front of the people again?
I think we have to be a little more patient, you know, because the timing was a little bit off when we came in because as far as touring, because that's what we want to do. We want to sing together. And so we're coming in right off of COVID. As a matter of fact, we had a super spreader concert.
Yeah.
You know, and the people that missed those gigs during COVID, you know, they're getting the gigs now. Yeah. They're getting, you know, booked now. And so it's hard for us to find a spot just yet. But by next summer, we'll be back in the ranks of things. And I think we've had to be patient about that, really. It's hard. We want to work. We want to sing.
But we're not going to do 250 dates a year like 30 years ago.
Right.
We're usually in bed by 10 o'clock now. So
there's nothing wrong with that.
No, but putting 250 dates on the year and yeah, that just kind of sounds. But who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, if they're good, and we would love to go to Europe. We would love to do some things overseas. In fact, we've been well received over there so far. With our music. What are we, 22 or?
20, I think 22. That's the England and Scotland charts over there. So we shall see. We may be going to Liverpool. I don't know.
We talked to Mr. Jackson's on.
Oh, my word, please.
Are we scaring you yet?
No, not at all. Not at all.
No. We would love to go over there. And I'll tell you, one of the things I've noticed about that culture is that they don't have the same hangups about age that people in America have, especially for women. You know, you get a certain age and, you know, there's always that you should be doing something else or something out there. And in England, they have just never really bought into that a lot. You know, they like good music. They want good music, you know, and that's what it's about, the music, so.
That's cool. Well, guys, girls, I should say, girls next door. Right. Where is, if folks want to catch up with the music, the upcoming releases, YouTube, social media, all that, where's the best place to catch up with you guys?
Well, I want Diane she's good with the social media, but I do want to tell you, coming up, we're going to get to sing at the Ark Encounter in Kentucky. That'll be coming up. That's coming up the 23rd of August. So we're excited about that. That's something that we hope. Yeah, we like we said, we don't have a lot of things coming up, but that's one thing. If y'all are in the area and want to go to the Ark, come see us.
That's cool.
That's the 23rd.
The 23rd of August.
Yeah. The best place to catch up with us, you know, if you want to just go to one place, would be our webpage, www.girlsnextdoormusic.com. If you don't put the music on the end, let me just say, you're going to be surprised.
See, it's not my fault.
Right. Disclaimer. So just about everything. We're on all the, you know, the streaming platforms. But if you go to our webpage, you can actually buy, that's the only place you can buy the entire CD right now. The singles, of course, will be on all the streaming platforms. And we're on Facebook and we're on all that stuff, you know. And it's Girls Next Door Music. Wherever you go, that's what it is.
Girls Next Door music. Well, oh, and the rabbit ears do make an appearance. That's awesome.
Sorry. I just realized I was missing out on something.
You waited way too long. Well, thank you guys so much for the visit today, and very inspirational. I appreciate the words that you guys had to share with us today. Look forward to hopefully having you guys back again real soon.
We would love to. Thank you so much. Great talking with you.
Good for you.
Yeah. Inspiration as well.
You are.
Well, thank you.
And welcome back.
Yes.
You know, just enjoy life.
Now, are you someone who doesn't mind having the subtitles on? Or do you find them too distracting? Well, it sounds like most people could turn them on occasionally, even if they know the language and don't have hearing issues. In a new survey, 66% of people say that they turn their TV subtitles on at least occasionally, with 13% saying they always have them on. Now, there are a lot of reasons that people do this. The two most popular are enhanced comprehension, 27%, and to help understand accents, 26%. Now, that's like adding subtitles to understand thicker English accents on British shows, or even regional American accents, especially Appalachian, Southern, and South Boston. 22% of people like to have subtitles on in noisy places. And other reasons include hearing difficulties, to avoid disturbing others, learning a new language, sound sensitivity, and to make it easier to multitask. Now, the reasons people don't like subtitles include that they're distracting and don't always match the words being spoken. They move too fast or slow. They can clutter the screen, and they're inconvenient to turn on. Now, when it comes to watching shows in a different language, subtitles are more than twice as popular as dubbed audio. The survey also had a few other fun stats, like 8% of us think that today's movies and shows don't have enough sexy scenes. Only 37% of us think the sex scenes we see are realistic, and 43% of us say sex scenes are rarely or never important to the story. All right, guys, our next guest on the podcast, it has been a minute. Country singer, songwriter, got a new single we're going to talk about called Strawberry Daiquiris. Chase Mitchell on with us today. And Chase, I kind of messed up your name after all of that other stuff. Your name was what I messed up. Chase Mitchell with us today. And Chase, appreciate you taking the time, brother.
Thank you so much for having me. At least you didn't say like Chase McDaniel. I get confused a lot these days with him.
That's cool. Now, Chase, where did, like I told you, this is our first time to actually chat. So I just like to delve into who Chase is. So where did music for you, when was that first of interest? Do you remember a time where there was not music of interest, I should say?
Music has literally, it's been a part of my life for, I mean, as long as I can remember. The first couple like early moments where I was like, I love music. I was just a little toddler, probably 2-3 years old. And the two songs that I love, and I think this is real telling, I guess, nowadays, of kind of the music I make now, but I loved Ice Ice Baby by Vanilla Ice, and I loved Achy Breaky Heart by Bailey Ray Cyrus. Those two songs seem to have been tearing up the charts back when I was like a toddler, and I loved them both, man. And those are kind of like the first early moments. But other than that, you know, watching my mom clean the house, listening to Stevie Wonder or Michael Bolton and that kind of stuff, you know, I've got a lot of memories of that. But where music really started for me, I got my first record deal in management deal when I was 9 years old. I was 9 turning 10, and I was put into a boy band back in like the late 99, 2000-ish mm-hmm. era, mm-hmm. back when boy bands were like, I guess, the it thing. And yeah, that's where kind of music became a little bit more than just something that I loved, but potentially a career.
Now, my question for you is the mullet, is it more of a nod to Billy Ray or to Michael Bolton? That's the question I got to pose.
Well, see, I think if we're going, I think to a couple underrated, overlooked mullets, for sure, Michael Bolton. But also Kenny G, dude. That dude rocked a pretty solid mullet, but he had a little flair to it with the perm. He had like the perm mullet before that was even a thing. So
is that something we can look for on the horizon from you, or is that that an?
Hey argument? Man, you never know. That nowadays it's funny because I've been doing this for the last few years, and now it's like I look around Nashville and I'm like, oh my god, dude, everyone's got the same haircut. I'm gonna have to go back to just buzzing my hair off, or I'm gonna have to like do the perm and dip them in like dye and stuff and have like rainbow perm, something just to break through the damn noise.
That's funny. Now Chase, who kind of pushed you? Yeah, maybe kept you motivated, if you will, because I know there's ups, there's the peaks, there's the valleys. I mean, everybody sees the artist at their high moments, but who kept you going when you were getting no's?
To be honest, I'm really blessed to have a lot of really good family and friends that really believed in what I was doing at a young age and throughout my life. Because anytime that I would try to like get down on myself, or maybe try to like, all right, is this the right thing for me? Is this my right path? All my family and friends, you know, especially my brother, my father, you know, and those are some of my toughest critics, you know, that keep a solid foot in my ass throughout my life. And, you know, if they're saying so, then it made me feel more confident in it. And I know not a lot of people have that, especially artists or songwriters. Matter of fact, it's just the opposite. I feel like a lot of people get looked at as like crazy to pursue a career or to make a living in music. A lot of the friends and family are like, get real. So the fact that I had the support, that made it a lot easier, you know, because that's really what this town is. It's just a bunch of no's, and maybe one day you get a yes, but it's 99 no's and one yes that makes the difference. So
that's right. You're just waiting for the one yes. That's what you're waiting for.
That's right.
Now, how much difference is there from songwrite number one, whenever that was for you, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, compared to Strawberry Daiquiris? I mean, how much have you grown, and how much do you laugh at the younger Chase?
A lot. It's kind of like if someone was to try to think about how to put in perspective, like your first song, and then years later, you know, songs where you feel like you're kind of, you'll never master the talent. Songwriting isn't something that you'll ever master. It's just something that you just get slightly better at over time. It's like trying to, you know, the first time you ever went in the kitchen and your grandma or your mom was like, all right, you can help now. And we're going to let you, you know, and it's like, you look back and you're like, oh, this wasn't that good. And then over the years, you know, you just get better. And stuff is, it just becomes tastier, I guess. That's kind of the same thing. You know, I look back, and in the moment when I made those first few songs, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, and they're awful, you know, you think they're so cool, but it takes a while to kind of look back and be like, all right, now I get it.
Now, who are the writers that inspire you, that you see, maybe not even the music that's put out, but the lyrical content? Who are the writers that inspire you?
A lot of writers here in town, like Jeffrey Steele, Neil Thrasher, Wendell Mobley, of course, Chris Stapleton, Michael Hardy, you know, AKA Hardy. These are dudes that I definitely look up to. I mean, they are master storytellers. Craig Wiseman, these guys are just like the best at what they do. And it never gets old studying how that they use their, how they rhyme certain words, or how they kind of use certain imagery, or how they tell a story without it just seeming to be just like monotonous. Because honestly, a lot of country music these days, it's kind of all the same context. But what something that's always kind of like been perplexing to me or really interesting is like, well, that's true, but how you can do it differently or say the same thing differently is what's really intriguing. It's kind of like Mexican food. If you think about it, all Mexican food's the same thing. It's just meat, cheese, tortilla, something, you know. But it's like so many variations of these dishes, and it's always amazing. And so I kind of look at it as like seeing those guys be able to take a concept or a construct or the hierarchy of what country music is, and over and over and over again tell the same story but just different, is really cool.
Now, when you were on stage and you got lyrics sung back to you the first time, what were you able to continue on, or did you have to just take a minute?
Well, that really honestly just happened for the first time recently, because I've been doing music my whole life. And it wasn't until just this past year, you know, I had my first song go to radio, and now my second song go to radio. And we were in the midst of this, it was like a cheerleading tour, which is super wild. It was kind of an out of the box opportunity for me, but I got to go and perform for thousands of cheerleaders all across the country at their, these competitions that they would host at these arenas for like a weekend. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, I performed at the Wharf twice to thousands of these girls. I performed at the Coliseum in Biloxi, the Atlanta, Gwinnett Arena in Atlanta. It was surreal, but it wasn't until about the second event. I think we were in Tupelo, actually. We were at the Tupelo Arena, the Bancorp South Tupelo Arena. And these girls knew my song. And I was like, what? And halfway through, you're almost like, you want to act cool. You want to act it like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. But, I mean, the truth is, it is wild when you start hearing people sing it back and know it. It was even more wild, too, because they were recognizing my wife, who was in my first music video, Backroad. And so, yeah, just to see them connecting with it, I that'll never get old. I mean, it's surely, I still can't wait to get more of that.
Now for you, what are your goals with Strawberry Daiquiris and how much are Strawberry Daiquiris a part of your daily life anyway?
Oh, well, Strawberry Daiquiris, it's more of like it's a mindset, you know. It's an ode to just wanting to go back to the beach, maybe that first time summer love with that one, you know, spouse or partner or ex or lover, whatever. And just try to, you know, live life on island time for a weekend. And so that's kind of like almost a daily for me. I try not to take anything too serious. I try to lean on the fact that, you know, life really isn't all that serious when you look back at it. And all you're going to want is to long for those memories and those moments where everything just stood still. So Strawberry Daiquiris is kind of, you know, that song Kokomo. I think it's the Beach
Boys.
I've heard it.
Yeah.
That is a perfect example of it's a state of mind, you know? And that's my hope for Strawberry Daiquiris. I'm hoping that someone else 10 years from now is like, man, I'm tired of working 60 hours a week in the middle of these, you know, middle USA. I need to go to a beach. I need to unwind. I need to take a trip with my wife. And they put on that song and it takes them right there, right away. That's my hope for Strawberry Daiquiris.
Now, for you, songwriting and putting the music together and all that in the process, what's first for you? Do you hear the melody? Do you have the words, or is it a process that sometimes one leads the other?
It's never always the same. So sometimes what I'll do, because I know a lot of songwriters here in town that they write every single day, and that is amazing. And I noticed that when I do that, I stop being able to make authentic, like, connections. Cause like, you're not always experiencing something every day worth writing about. You know what I mean? At some point you're just making noise, you know? And so I kind of try to just sit back, let life happen. Cause life will, you give life a few days, right? It'll smack you right in the face every time. And I try to just be a sponge to my experiences or maybe someone that I might've met one day, you know, in passing, getting coffee or something. And then every couple of weeks, I'll unpack those notes and those experiences, and I try to write a couple songs. That's one way. And then another is just being in a studio environment. I have an amazing producer and mentor that I write and produce with by the name of Danny Rader here in town. An amazing talent. Has like 64 number ones to his name, and Kenny Chesney's guitar player, like just crazy, super talented dude. Don't know why he and I hit it off so well and he decided to work with me as much as he has, but I'll go in with him and he'll be working on, you know, these guitar melodies and riffs and building out these productions. And then I'll just kind of sit and just be, you know, jotting down stuff, and maybe the melody comes first and we build from it. So it really isn't ever just like one set thing. There's several ways to skin that cat, if you will.
Now, I've told a lot of our listeners and viewers, they know I've made several trips into CMA Fest, and I've told a lot of stories about how you never know who you're going to run into and where it's going to be. What was your first experience of running into somebody and being maybe a little starstruck in Nashville?
Well, so when I first played CMA Fest, I just played a couple shows this past year during CMA Fest, but my first time ever actually playing, I played the Chevy stage. And it was maybe 2000, like six or seven or something like that. I wasn't that old. I was probably 16 years old, 17 years old. And I remember this was when like Lee Brice and Eric Church, Luke Bryan, all of them were on the come up. And I had an amazing agency at the time that was helping me book a ton of shows. And they had booked me for this thing called the Chevy like Ride Around. And I'm like sitting there in line. They have a dozen artists that are participating in it where fans can come in and they get to tour around Nashville and like, you know, whatever the latest Silverado model is or something. And they get to sit with an up and coming artist. And I just remember being in line and it was Luke Bryan, Lee Brice, Eric Church, like all these dudes. And it was like so starstruck for me. But this was like as because I knew who they were, having been in town, but they were just on the come up. They were on the very, very beginning of their career. So it's amazing to see, you know, that I just tried sitting there being quiet. I didn't want to say anything that would, you know, like that would work against me. But yeah, I do remember that being pretty wild, being in that line and being like, man, like, how cool would it be to be like one of these dudes one day?
And what is it about Nashville for you personally? But I know there's so many things that it does inspirational wise, but what is it about Nashville itself that helps you speak through music?
Well, Nashville particularly is the industry that makes this town go round. Well, it used to be. Maybe nowadays it's more real estate and restaurants and tourism. But it used to be that this was the town of songsmiths. You know, if you wanted to be a talented songwriter, you had to be where it was happening. And this is, you know, and I still think that that's really true. And I think there's something about Nashville when you're surrounded. It's really easy to be in some town that's 500 miles away. And everyone happens to love what you're doing because you're probably the only one doing it, you know? But when you come here, it's like this instant, it's not competition, I would say, even though that it might be. It's more so just the demand of making sure you're on top of your A game, you know, that you're doing what you have to do to be pushing yourself so that you deserve to have a chance, you know, maybe to be invited into the room. Because not everyone, I mean, everyone wants to be in these rooms and writes, and, but there's a lot of people out there, very, very talented, way more talented than me, that still are looking for a big break. And so it's kind of just that friendly reminder every day. You got to be doing something to be pushing yourself forward and working on yourself.
That's right. Well, Chase, if folks want to check out your upcoming tour dates, social media, where they can find merch as well, all that stuff, where's the best place for folks to find everything Chase Mitchell, brother?
So if you go to Instagram or Facebook and you type in Chase Mitchell, you should see my ugly mug right there somewhere. Or you can go to chasemitchell.com and that'll take you to everything. And definitely stay up to date. We have a lot of shows throughout the Gulf Coast throughout the rest of summer and early fall. So please do stay tuned.
All right. Again, Chase Mitchell, check out the singles Strawberry Daiquiris. And Chase, appreciate you taking the time, brother, and look forward to catching up again real soon, man.
Thank you so much, Cam. Can't wait to do it again, bro.
Again, thanks to our special guests, The Girls Next Door and Chase Mitchell, for being on. And before we wrap things up, I had one more that I just had to share with you. Now, this is going to sound weird, but just be aware, these shoes are not for eating. Well, the makers of Jet Puffed Marshmallows, they're now selling shoes that are supposed to look like s'mores. Now, they're puffy slip-ons. They're not shaped like a s'more. They're just sort of going for the essence of a s'more. Now, they basically look like a slightly toasted marshmallow, and the tops are the color of graham crackers. They partnered with the shoe company Kizik, so they're the ones selling them. Now, Jet Puffed is calling them s'more shoes, but on Kizik's website, they're listed as Toasted Marshmallow Mars Roamers. They're a limited time thing until they sell out, and they're not cheap. Each pair costs $119. Well, again, thanks for joining us for this episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, maybe anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page of any of the socials. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok at Cameron Dole. And if you'd like to help out in the funding for the podcast, you can check out some great. And if you have a special guest idea, you can just go ahead and email me at gqwithcam@gmail.com. Again, thanks to our good friend Brandon Allen, who came up with this theme music so long ago. It has been working for us so long. Let's just keep it going. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Join us for episode 2, Kent Blasey, Ray Matey coming up in just a few days.